Hello everyone and welcome to the First Exit podcast for 2024. My name's Fiona Stewart.
And I'm Philip Nitschke.
And this week we're talking about capital punishment and nitrogen hypoxia, or in Philip's words...
What I wish I'd told Kenny.
So before we get started, this is a sort of a spoiler alert, but neither of us support capital punishment, and no, we're not getting off the beaten path of the end of life choices debate.
No, we're not getting off off on this topic. They are relevant. Now, I think they're associated, and I've been involved for a long time in the idea that people should have choice at the end of life. And of course, when you start talking about capital punishment, we're talking about the end of life where there's no choice.
So we're not setting out to do a polemic against capital punishment, but we feel that we do need to contextualise what we're about to talk about. Now, Philip, for many years, you've sort of written about and you've followed the issue of life sentences, prison, and more recently, capital punishment. You've often argued that a life sentence in jail is a form of torture, and therefore prisoners should have the right to end their life at a time of their choosing.
Yes, I think as we see... various politicians around the world thinking they want to get tough on crime and wishing to impose harsher and harsher sentences as a way of correcting the society that's moving in ways they don't like, we see people in larger and larger numbers being given sentences where they are to be incarcerated for the term of their natural life. My feeling about that is where there's no pretense of rehabilitation within the corrective services system, that we're really talking about torture here. In other words, what we're condoning, if we accept something like that, is state-sanctioned torture. And I think we should have nothing to do with such an option. And so I've been opposed to the idea of life without parole. And I've been communicating with, a number of prisoners in various countries, mostly the US, who have been given that sentence for some time.
You wrote about this in your autobiography, Damned If I Do, and your involvement at that time concerned Daniel in Darwin.
Yeah, I think Daniel in Darwin was one of the first people that that had me start to think more about this issue. Daniel was a person I had a long-term prisoner in the Northern Territory prison system, a person who had been convicted of murder and given a very long sentence within a Darwin prison, and I got to know about him in quite an unusual sense. I can explain it. I just started working at Darwin Hospital, and I went across to work early shift one morning from the staff residential part of Darwin Hospital. And as I got near the hospital, which is about 11, it's a big building, 11 stories high, I saw from one of the top floors a whole heap of knotted sheets which had come down from one of a smashed window right at the top of the hospital. And it looked like someone had escaped from the hospital. And as I got closer, I saw the crowd of people, and I realised that indeed someone had. Well, that someone was Daniel Heiss, who had been in the hospital under supervision and by warders from the jail while he was receiving some medical procedure, and had locked the door in his own room, threatened the warders not to come in, smashed the window, knotted the sheets together, and tried to climb down from the 10th floor. Didn't quite make the bottom because his sheets weren't long enough, dropped the last bit and broke his ankle. So his escape was short-lived, but I certainly got to hear about him, and I got to hear, everyone in Darwin got to hear about him a little later when he escaped from prison another time, the actual prison.
And he became a bit of a local legend, didn't he?
He became a bit of a legend because a lot of people were on his side. It's true that he had murdered a person. Either way, he'd been given a savage sentence and was paying a long price. He'd been in prison a long time. So that's how I got to know Daniel. And when he finally did come eligible for parole, I was involved in trying to get him a place to stay.
So you're a character witness. So American-style capital punishment, state-sanctioned killing, is something a little bit newer to you, but it's a debate that you've watched quite closely, I guess, from, in recent years, the closing down of the supply of Nimbitol.
Yes, as I watch people being thrown into prison for lengthy and often mandatory sentences, it just seems to me that if we are going to go down this path, if countries are going to go down this path of imposing these horrendous sentences, that's life without parole, where they've given up on any chance of rehabilitation. This is basically, I would argue, the state trying to get even, the state issuing torture, the state torturing people. If we're going to go down that path, at least the state should also accept the fact that it needs to offer, as a fundamental right, the option of such a person to be able to end their own life in the prison. To incarcerate someone for the term of their national life and then make it impossible for them to even suicide, I think is the worst form of torture.
But I guess American-style capital punishment is something a bit newer to you, Philip, than your, I guess, previous prisoner activism, prisoner rights activism. But capital punishment is a debate that you've been watching quite closely, and in recent years, something that has come to your attention and that impacts upon the right to die debate has been the closing down of the supply of Nembutal as a means of executing prisoners.
Yes. Nembutal, of course, is the premier drug that people who want to end their lives in their own controls try to seek out, but it was also used in the American Corrective Services for people who were being executed as the drug used for execution. And as it's not only become harder for people who want to die to get that drug, it's also become quite hard for corrections in America to access the drug. The manufacturers of the drug, predominantly in Europe, do not want to supply drugs which they see as being used to execute people in another country, in this case America. And so America, keen as it is on capital punishment, has found it increasingly difficult to get the drugs required.
Now, hang on, some states aren't keen on capital punishment. We're talking here predominantly or about the Deep South, because we will be segueing into talking about the Alabama experience.
Yes, it's not every state in America that's that believes in capital punishment. There was a moratorium for a number of years. But it's obviously a much more popular option in America than many other countries. Certainly here in Europe, there's no access to capital punishment. It's been excluded, prevented, prohibited in countries like Australia, New Zealand, and many countries around the world, Canada. They don't have capital punishment.
Even
but
America
the UK. Is keen. Even the UK doesn't have capital punishment. So it's an anachronism in current times, something we should try to get rid of. And I get upset when I see it being used enthusiastically by still some states in America.
But would you say that we're talking about nitrogen hypoxia today because of the lack of supply and the difficulty of supply with Nembutal?
We're talking about nitrogen hypoxia today because in their enthusiasm to continue the process of killing prisoners in various states or some states of America, and the trouble they've had getting drugs to use lethal injections, and the lack of enthusiasm to use some of the other methods that have been employed, such as hanging, such as firing squad, which they still use in some states. There's been this search in American states by those enthusiastic to kill prisoners for some method which will provide them with the means of a reliable and peaceful way to execute prisoners. They've had increasing trouble getting the drugs, and in fact not only getting the drugs for lethal injection, but using them, because even when they get the drugs, they often find, or they reliably or regularly find, not often, but regularly find, that they can't actually get a needle into the vein of the prisoner. This is a person who doesn't want to die, and someone has to try and strap them down and get a needle into a vein reliably so that they can inject the drugs, which will then bring about the death of the prisoner.
What is it about the veins of prisoners that makes this so hard?
I don't think it's anything special about the veins of prisoners. It's often the case in normal medical practice where you can find a number of people that it's very hard to get a needle into a vein. But there is an issue where someone is very tense, very anxious, as a prisoner invariably would be as they confront their own death. In a situation where you're trying to kill someone, that is, the state is trying to kill someone, for it to be a significant embarrassment and something that needs to be stopped. And people seeing or watching an attempt to try and get a needle into a prisoner so they can kill him, and the failure after several hours of putting needles in various parts of a person's body, see this whole rather grotesque procedure as unacceptable.
And this is what brings us to the issue of nitrogen hypoxia. Now, most recently in January of this year, the state of Alabama killed a man called Kenny Smith. And Kenny Smith's death was the first death ever in the context of capital punishment where nitrogen hypoxia was used. Now, nitrogen hypoxia might be new in the context of capital punishment, but it sure isn't new in the right to die debate, is it?
No, nitrogen hypoxia has been one of the, one of the more acceptable, most readily available, and is certainly one of the legal ways a person can successfully and peacefully end their own lives.
Should we call it a staple of the right to die?
A staple of the right to die movement?
Smorgasbord of options?
I mean, even when I became first involved back in the 1990s in this whole issue of right to die options, I realised or found out that one of the strategies that was being used then was the so-called ubiquitous plastic bag, where people would fill a plastic bag with an inert gas, traditionally that was helium, and then suddenly put their head into a bag of into a plastic bag full of helium, take a deep breath, faint and die. It seemed to, and was used quite successfully by people wanting to have this chance to be able to easily end their own lives.
Now, Americans refer to plastic bags as hoods, don't they?
They do. They had various terms for it. Often it was just known as an exit bag.
Thank you, Derek Humphrey.
But it was publicised quite a lot by Derek Humphrey in his book Final Exit. He talked a lot about it. People found it intriguing and interesting, and when, as they had more and more experience, they realised that it was very effective.
But some people found it repulsive, and I'm thinking here of Lisette Nigot in the documentary that was about you, Mademoiselle and the Doctor, and Lisette, for aesthetic reasons, rejected it. And I've seen this at exit workshops since, that women are much less likely to think that it's acceptable to put a plastic bag on your head and fill it with nitrogen or helium than any other method, well, for example, than a peaceful pill.
Oh, there's a lot of resistance to it by a number of people, but I spend my time at workshops explaining why it is a reliable and peaceful death, but that doesn't get around the fact that you do need equipment, you do need some source of an inert gas, as I said, traditionally helium, but increasingly nitrogen. So you've got to have a cylinder of gas, you need some way of controlling flow, and of course then you've got the ubiquitous plastic bag which you have to put over your head. Many people find the whole idea, and they just say it as such. They say, I don't want to die like that with a plastic bag over my head. I find the idea revolting. I have to try and explain, well, look, from a physiological point of view, it's a very peaceful death. But they say, I don't give a damn how physiologically peaceful it is. I don't like the thought of it. And many people have this rather ascetic reluctance to go down this path.
Yeah, particularly the women. But in the book, we also talk about the fact that if someone were to take away the equipment after somebody has died with a plastic bag on the head and through nitrogen hypoxia, then there's no discoverable means of death. Is that correct?
Yes. If you use the gas nitrogen, and increasingly that is the gas that's been used for the last decade or so, it's replaced helium for several reasons. Now, if you use nitrogen as the gas and someone takes away all the equipment and you're just found lying there peacefully dead having used this process to kill yourself, there's no way of knowing how you died. There's no marks left in the process. And even if there's an autopsy carried out and the various organs of the body are dissected and looked at autopsy, there's no way of knowing how you ended your life. And this is, in fact, the only undetectable method by which you can kill yourself.
So 2 points of clarification here. The person who does take away the equipment, there's a minimal offence there, lower level offence of interfering with the circumstances of a death or interfering with a corpse. But surely it's this fact of being able to die without anyone really knowing how you died that has kept it as a staple in the right to die debate.
I don't think that's the only reason, but it's one of the important reasons. With some people do not want anyone to know that they've been the person who's ended their own life. In other words, they don't want to be recorded on the certification that carried after you die on their certificate of death saying this person has suicided. Now, if you don't want to be known to have suicided, I suppose you better use a method which can't be readily determined as a suicide, and gas with nitrogen is the only way that you can guarantee this.
Okay, so while you might be sitting there with a plastic bag on your head looking quite awful, it is a peaceful death.
Well, that's the point I have to make at workshops over and over and over. Yes, it's a very peaceful death. It's a very fast death. And this is what obviously attracted the interest of the correctional services people. If you do it properly and follow the process and practice the procedure, it's rather dependent on procedure, but it's straightforward. If you're prepared to practice and learn what you should do, it works very well. You fill the bag up, you pull it down, you take a deep breath, you faint within 1 to 2 breaths, and you die 5 to 10 minutes later while you're unconscious. It's a very quick, very reliable, very peaceful and totally legal way to end your own life.
But this doesn't sound like it's got anything in common with the death of Kenny, the execution of Kenny Smith, yet Kenny Smith also died from nitrogen hypoxia. So where do you start in terms of unpacking the differences between what you've just been talking about in terms of a plastic bag and nitrogen, and Kenny being strapped on the gurney and having a mask on his face?
I can explain a lot of what I think has gone wrong.
Where would you like to start, Philip?
Well, I've been aware for some time, some years, that those involved with capital punishment in America have been looking closely at ways to get around the issue they've got with lethal drugs, either getting needles into veins or accessing the drugs, and looking with increasing interest in the idea of using gas as a means of giving or providing a hypoxic death for a person they're trying to execute. In fact, it was about four years ago, when I received a phone call from the head of correctional services in one of the states of America, Oklahoma, made contact by email and then said he'd like to have a talk about the issue of nitrogen hypoxia because he realised that we'd had quite a lot of experience, and he made it quite clear to me on that phone call Oklahoma was looking into it as a possible alternative to the problems they were having with lethal injections.
And that's 5 years ago now. What did you say to him when he rang you up?
Well, I was a bit taken aback by it, and he also said he'd like my thoughts and advice. I made it very clear when I received the phone call that I was not a supporter of capital punishment, and I didn't feel like being in some ways involved in providing them with some means to continue the process, which I found so abhorrent.
Can you remember, was he asking you about plastic bags or masks or the sarco or all three?
No, it wasn't a terribly long conversation after I mentioned that I didn't really have any great enthusiasm to support what they were trying to do. But he did say a couple of things which did intrigue me a lot. One of the things he said to me was that they were planning to use a face mask. I pointed out that, well, we've had over 10, 15 years experience in the Right to Die movement, and that face masks as a means of providing or administering the gas had been abandoned in the Right to Die movement over a decade earlier because of problems with them. Still, he said, no, we are planning to use a face mask. I asked why. He said, because we feel it would be easier way of making sure that the prisoner had the gas delivered in a way that they couldn't avoid. And I suppose what he was really there pointing to is the fact they could hardly expect a prisoner to cooperate with putting a plastic bag over their head. So I could see this was a way of trying to deal with the case of a person who either wants to die, which is a situation we're involved in, versus a person who's being executed where they have to have the process done to them. So he planned a face mask, and I also said I'm surprised about that, and he said, no, it's going to be all right. Under American law, he was referring to Oklahoma law, it's important that they are able to make a last speech and that the people witnessing the execution are able to see the face of the person who's being executed as they die. It all sounded a bit grotesque, rather macabre. I found the whole conversation a difficult one. It wasn't unpleasant talking to Joe. His name's Joe Olberg. He was very friendly. I mean, I didn't find any difficulty talking to him, but he made it clear he was a supporter of capital punishment and they were looking at what he said was a humane and peaceful way to execute people. So I've known about it for a long time. I heard no more for several years, but I've been hearing media reports coming out of America that a number of states were looking at this process.
And it's through those media reports that you came to be involved in the court appeal to try and stay the execution of Kenny Smith. The court case last December, but clearly given that he was executed in late January this year, your contribution failed miserably.
Yes, I mean, I've known about the fact that it looked of all of the states in America that were looking at the idea of using nitrogen hypoxia, it was the state of Alabama that was going to be the first, and they had a particular prisoner there that they seemed very keen to kill, a person called Kenny Smith.
And the media reports were such that they were going to use a mask, and the way you became involved, correct me if I'm wrong, but it was because there was so much information coming out in the public domain from people who, in some cases, should have known better, but also people who were clearly trying to argue down the fact that Kenny was going to be executed, so really trying to give Kenny the best chance, and the legal team the best chance of arguing that a death with nitrogen hypoxia fit with a face mask strapped on was going to constitute cruel and unusual punishment and therefore legally should not go ahead.
Well, yes, I thought that given that they were talking about using a face mask, even in the public material that was coming up over this planned first ever execution using nitrogen, that I should at least make known to those people who were working on Kenny Smith's side, his lawyers, that we had, that by we I mean the Right to Die movement, had abandoned the use of face masks and that there were risks involved in trying to carry out this process. So I talked to the lawyers that were involved in providing him with legal assistance and in fact trying to prevent this execution method, and suggested to them that there were problems, and it was them, the lawyers who I talked to in New York originally, who made the point that it would be very helpful if I had a look at the what's known as the redacted protocol that had been put out by Alabama Corrections on what they were planning. And they sent me a copy of this document, heavily redacted, that is covered in black areas that you weren't allowed to read, but there was enough material provided to show that indeed they were going to use a face mask and that they had, they felt, everything in place for what they thought was going to be a very successful execution. I was worried and told the lawyers this, and they said, would you like to have a look at the procedure and the equipment that they plan to use in this particular prison, the Holman Prison, Corrections Prison in Alabama? And I said, what, you mean go and have a look? And they said, yes, we can get you to Holman Prison and we can allow you to, we'll see if we can get you to have a look at the equipment and you can tell us what you think and we'll be able to use that in the appeal we're launching to try and prevent the execution that will be heard in Montgomery, Alabama, on the 20th of December. This is 20th of December last year.
So what is it about the mask? What is it that you've always argued against in terms of, you've always advised people don't use a face mask if you're planning on a nitrogen hypoxic death?
The problems of face masks have been known in the Right to Die movement for some time. If you're going to use a face mask, the idea is that you're going to try and suddenly deliver only nitrogen to a person's breathing. In other words, you don't want any air which has got oxygen in it. The way it works, a death from nitrogen hypoxia, it's not that there's anything especially dangerous about nitrogen. The fact is that there's no oxygen, and so there's so much nitrogen and there's no oxygen. It's the lack of oxygen that brings about the death.
Is this why it doesn't really matter which inert gas you use, whether it's nitrogen or helium or argon?
Yes, it doesn't matter. These are just gases which are inert, as they say. You can't smell them. You don't know, in a sense, that you're even breathing them.
But nitrogen, they're not poisonous. Is one of those. They're not poisonous.
They're not poisonous. But what you're going to do is make sure that they take up the space which is normally occupied by the essential oxygen that you do need in every breath. So if you stop breathing air which has got 20% oxygen and 80% nitrogen or thereabouts, and suddenly start breathing 100% nitrogen, you'll rapidly die. But it's not because of the nitrogen per se, it's the lack of the 20% of oxygen that brings about your death. Now, if you use a face mask, you've got to make sure that there's no air leaking in, because if there is even a small amount when you take a deep breath, that bit of oxygen that you might suck in from the air may be enough to keep you alive. You've got to have 100% nitrogen that you're breathing, no oxygen in the surrounding air leaking into the process. So a face mask presents you with immediate problems of trying to make a good seal with your face. If you're going to put it over your nose and mouth, which are the only ways that air gets into your lungs, it's got to make a good seal across your forehead, down the side of your face, around your chin. And if you take a deep breath and it's not sealing and suck some air in from outside, enough oxygen can get in to frustrate the whole process. And that's what I felt would be a very possible source of failure in this particular execution. And it's certainly something that we found in the Right to Die movement causes problems regularly if you try to use face masks.
I also noticed that Kenny had a pretty healthy-looking beard. Would that have been an issue in the use of a face mask, the decision in the use of the face mask for him?
Yeah, any attempt. I mean, this idea of trying to get something that fits onto your face in a way that there's no leakage is a problem that confronts anaesthetists have known this for a long, long time. When they used to use gas a lot to make a person unconscious for surgery, someone would come along and put a face mask on you and deliver gas, and you'd hopefully lose consciousness. But anaesthetists knew that they had to hold the face mask on your face to make sure there was no leakage of air if the process was to work quickly. And that idea is important because as you lose consciousness, the muscles in your face change And what might have been a sealing face mask when you originally put it on, if it was held on by straps, can start to leak. So they would hold the face mask, mold the face mask as you lost consciousness, and keep it on your face until you became unconscious and could go into surgery. Now, that same problem seemed to me to be the situation with what they were planning with Kenny, and it's also the reason why we abandoned, by we I mean the Right to Die movement, abandoned face masks and moved towards the open system, and by open system I mean the plastic bag. The plastic bag works in a rather different way, and I can explain that, but it doesn't require any particular seal, because what you're doing in the plastic bag, the exit bag, is that you fill a bag up with nitrogen and then you suddenly put your head into the whole bag. So there's no air anyway around that can get in. There's a flow of gas that pushes down and makes sure that the flow of gas makes it impossible for any air to leak in, no matter how hard you might gasp for breath. And so that rather simple move from a face mask to an open bag has meant the process has moved from being a rather unreliable, unpredictable one to a very reliable method that's used by many in the Right to Die movement.
Well, I know that you made exactly these points in your deposition in December in Montgomery. So what did the state of Montgomery actually say when you gave them these warnings?
Well, as I just indicated earlier, they offered their lawyers, who I got to know for Kenny, suggested I come to the prison in Alabama. So I flew across to America and I went to the prison. And they took me to the execution chamber, which was used. In fact, it's the execution chamber they've been using for some time. And there's a lot of people who have died in that chamber on that particular gurney. They asked me if I wanted to have a look at the nitrogen system, the face mask they planned to use. And I said, yes. They asked if I wanted to put it on. I said, no, but I want you to put it on me. And so they asked me to climb onto the gurney and then they strapped the mask onto my face. With air running into it, so there was no risk to me. But it gave me a feeling for what it was going to be like for a person being executed there. I could see what the gurney was like. I was looking out through the face mask. I could see the observation room where all the witnesses would be for the planned execution. And the whole thing was horrific. It was rather grotesque. It was everything I hated about capital punishment being played out in front of my very eyes. And on top of that, I also saw the problems with the face mask and the attempts to make a good seal. They strapped it on, and I found it wasn't easy to dislodge, but it did seem to me that there was certainly a possibility of dislodgement. And of course, if there was any dislodgement, and the person being executed were to take a deep breath, enough oxygen might leak in from the air for the whole process to be frustrated and lead to yet another failure of execution.
Now, you were one of a number of expert witnesses. So you said all this in your deposition, and the state of Alabama said what in reply?
I was questioned at the deposition in Montgomery about a week after I was able to visit the actual execution facility at the prison. I was questioned about these issues. I made it as clear as I could that if we hadn't the Right to Die movement had abandoned face masks, I thought it was rather surprising that they were still planning to revisit a method which we had abandoned as being unreliable. I hope they took notice of what I was saying. I felt there was a risk that there would be air sucked in. It would slow down the process so that the death from being very quick and effective could turn into a rather protracted process, and there was a significant risk of any or significant air leaked in that you might lead to a death, or you might lead to a person who's not quite dead but with significant brain damage, all of which seemed to me to be the sort of outcomes that no one wanted, and that there was a way they could resolve this. And I said that in the deposition and when I was questioned in the courtroom in Montgomery, that the way to be certain of this was effectively to replace the plastic bag with probably a small room where a person would go into the small room and then they would fill the small room rapidly with oxygen, with nitrogen.
So a small room like a sarco, but we'll come back to that later.
Yes, it did have, of course, this was of particular interest because of the sarco project, which I've been involved in full time for the last couple of several years.
So the media reports of the way that Kenny Smith died in late January, did these come as a surprise to you, the eyewitness accounts which were reported?
Well, they did come to me. I've been reading repeated accounts from some of the journalists and certainly from his spiritual advisor, the Reverend Hood, who was with him when he died, about what a macabre, horrific, torturous experience he went through to die. He did die. It took much longer than anyone had been led to believe, and certainly much longer than we see in the Right to Die movement, where a person takes two deep breaths, loses consciousness, and dies within 5 minutes. It seemed that the process was described as a person who was taking a lot longer, several minutes before they lost consciousness. There was associated contractions of muscles, which they interpreted the witnesses of the person struggling against the restraining straps on the gurney. A person who seemed to be being tortured to death over a protected period.
Is this what you expected? Is that what you actually think was happened? He was tortured, writhing in pain. Does this fulfill your worst expectations?
I, of course, have spent some time. I wasn't at the execution, although I've talked to people now who were actually there and able to witness the death, trying to work out what actually happened. And I think I can understand in my own mind what went wrong, if you like. And I can see that this is an issue for trying to use nitrogen hypoxia to kill someone who doesn't want to die.
And that is very much the media reporting, that the execution was botched.
They are saying that nitrogen hypoxia is a grim and grotesque method for bringing about the death of a person.
And now, what say you, Philip?
Huh?
What say you, Philip Nitschke?
Well, this is particularly concerning to us because we are planning and about to use the Sarco device.
Now, stop talking about the Sarco. We're not talking about that until the end of the podcast.
I have clearly been telling people for a long time that nitrogen hypoxia is a very good way for a person who wants to die to carry out that process. And Sarco allows that to take place. And so I wanted for them now to be saying in most media reports that you read that nitrogen hypoxia is a grim, horrific, torturous way for a person to die brings about a real challenge to what I've been saying, and I have to try and explain what happened and what went wrong.
So what went wrong with Kenny?
Well, this brings me back to the fact that I met Kenny when I was at the prison. After my experience of the execution room and the chance to have a look at the equipment, they asked whether I wanted to meet and talk to Kenny, and I said yes. And with Robert Grass, who was his lawyer, who I was with at the time, we met with Kenny. He's a nice person. He asked a lot of questions and talked a lot about his experience. He was at that stage 2 weeks away from being executed with his first chance to test this method. I thought he was asking me at one stage about what was likely to happen, but it was difficult to see that, and he didn't ask direct questions. I would have answered him had he asked specifically, but I didn't feel like just launching into a discussion of the sort of things that are going to happen to your body in this case.
Because at the time, I remember that week when I asked, what did you talk about with Kenny? You really were talking about the fact that the legal team was quite confident that the execution wouldn't go ahead at the current time.
Yeah, I mean, I was very much interested in saying to him that I felt we had a very good case for making sure that they didn't try to use this method of a face mask and nitrogen hypoxia, that combination, in an attempt to end his life. And that I felt, as did his lawyers and the lawyers who were there, and Robert Grass, who was his main solicitor who I was with, made this clear to him. We felt we had quite a good chance at the hearings to come a week later in Montgomery that the process would be hopefully abandoned or certainly delayed while they reconsidered the actual technique that they were planning.
So all the eyewitness reports that have been reported in the media, and we must say, I mean, some of the news wires, those journalists were actually there. So they were reporting what they as eyewitnesses saw. And it wasn't a pretty death. It was far from it. It was just awful. So in a nutshell, Philip, what went wrong with Kenny's death?
The best I can interpret what they saw and how it varies from what I've seen with people that are using this process to end their life peacefully and reliably and voluntarily is that this was a very specific situation of a person who didn't want to die. Now, if you don't want to die and you haven't been given any particular instruction about how you might speed up the whole process if gas is to be used, and I don't believe that anyone had talked to Kenny about this, the natural reaction when you know that they're about to deliver nitrogen is what I think we saw Kenny do. He held his breath as long as he could. He took a deep breath while he was still being delivered air. When the nitrogen started to flow at the time the execution was told, he was told that he was now about to die, he held his breath. He held his breath for as long as he can. So what he's got is completely full lungs. His lungs are expanded full of air with its 20% oxygen. And that oxygen is slowly being absorbed into his blood as his blood goes up to his brain, keeping him alive. Now, you can only hold your breath for so long, and sooner or later he would be forced to take small breaths, but what he would have been taking were small breaths of nitrogen in on top of hyperinflated lungs full of oxygen and air. The whole process becomes a much slower one. There's a much slower drop in the level of oxygen going to the brain. And instead of fainting or losing consciousness rapidly within 1 to 2 breaths, the whole process is dragged right out as long as you can keep on holding your breath and taking these tiny little breaths of nitrogen. And associated with that, and on top of that, is that with that slow reduction in oxygen level to the brain, the increased chance of contractions, involuntary muscular seizures, which led to this perception of a person struggling against the straps. I think they were involuntary contractions, probably. Spasms, contractions. I don't think it was as often depicted by the journalists watching that this was a person struggling to get free. I think it's more likely a person who had no control over those muscular contractions. But while they were losing consciousness, this rather grotesque depiction of a person seemingly struggling against restraining straps as they tried desperately to hold their breath against a situation which they had no control over, gave this account, which is now the one which is seen as being part and parcel of a nitrogen hypoxic death.
Okay, so Kenny didn't actually have to die in that awful, grim, terrifying way. If he'd cooperated, he could have had quite a relatively peaceful and reliable death, but therein lies the rub, doesn't it? He was wedged because he's being executed.
Yeah, he was wedged. I mean, he had no way, he had no real interest. Even if he wanted a peaceful death, which he didn't want to die. He's a nice person. I like Kenny. We took a photo. He took a photo when I was there. He said he'd set it up. He'd hoped I'd be able to take a photo of him. And I really like Kenny. And we should point out that Kenny Smith was in jail for murder, but the murder was committed 30 years ago, and he's been on death row for over 30 years while the state tries to get its act together to end his life.
So we loop straight back to what we started the podcast with, life sentences torture.
When is enough? And the other thing we haven't mentioned is that Kenny Smith's one of the two people where they've tried, one of the two people still alive, well, he's no longer alive, where they tried to execute him with lethal injection and failed after 3 hours of trying to get a needle into his veins.
So
they
the equivalent of the hangman's rope breaking, and he should have walked
He should have
away
walked free, I would have said, after going through that horrific, torturous experience. And here he was now, a year or so later after that first attempt to end his life with this new untried method.
So what do you wish that you'd told Kenny when you'd met?
Look, had I known that they were going ahead, and I at the time thought I hoped they wouldn't, but had I known they were going ahead, and had he given me any indication that he wanted to know how he could make this process easier for himself, I would have said, look, Kenny, wait till you know the oxygen is, the nitrogen is flowing, that air has stopped, exhale completely, and then take the deepest breath you can. Really fill your lungs with nitrogen, a really big inhalation. You might have to do it a second time, but you will faint. You'll lose consciousness within 2 breaths if you do that. And the mask doesn't leak. I would have had to add that caveat because it's a face mask and it might have leaked. But if the face mask doesn't leak and you're able to exhale, get your lungs completely empty, know that you're receiving 100% nitrogen at that point, and then take the deepest breath you can, and perhaps a second deepest breath you can, you will faint. And while you're unconscious, you will die within 5 or so minutes. And for the people watching, they would have seen this as a rather peaceful death. Now, Kenny might have wanted to know that, and in some ways I wish I'd told Kenny that, because at least he would have been in the, have the opportunity to make it easier for himself.
But had he followed your instructions, had he known about it and followed your instructions, I mean, he was well aware that he would have become the pin-up boy for,
absolutely,
you know, capital punishment by nitrogen hypoxia.
Absolutely.
You know?
I mean, as it was, the horrific accounts of what went wrong with Kenny are being used now, I'm rather pleased to say, to provide all sorts of problems with other states who are thinking of doing this, and even Alabama thinking of doing it again. Because if it is being depicted as a horrible way to torture a person to death, they're not as likely to make use of this strategy. So Kenny was wedged. If he'd made a peaceful death for himself, they would have all said, look, works fine, let's all go and do this and we'll have nitrogen or hypoxic executions everywhere. As it is, that's not happening because Kenny paid that price. So he was something of a martyr, I think, for the anti-capital punishment cause. But unfortunately, he went through a much harsher process than he would have done had he simply had as his main priority a peaceful death for himself. So I think he's something of a hero, a very nice person, and he needs to be applauded for what he unfortunately had to go through to make this point. We might see, I think, nitrogen hypoxia execution stop now after the reports of his death. And if that happens, I'll be thrilled and give all of that credit to Kenny and the death he went through.
Now, we've talked a lot about the switch from pentobarbital for execution in the US to nitrogen hypoxia. One of the reasons for that is because the increasing scarcity or the inability for the authorities to actually get hold of sodium pentobarbital. But it's been relatively easy to get hold of nitrogen. But since the execution of Kenny Smith, even the supply of nitrogen is taking some pressure.
Yeah, one of the things we thought were certainly in the Right to Die movement we have been able to appreciate is the fact it's very hard to ban nitrogen. We're all breathing nitrogen right now. It's everywhere. 80% of the air we breathe is nitrogen. So how can they ban it? But you do need nitrogen in a special form. You need it pure, that is, without any oxygen in it. You need it in some form like a compressed gas. And now, thanks to Kenny and the horrible death that he has been reported as having gone through, the gas companies, some of the five of the major gas companies around the world now are saying, look, we don't want our gas, our nitrogen, being used for execution, in rather the same way as the drug companies have said, look, we're quite good at making Nembutal or sodium pentobarbital, but we don't want it used for execution. It's one thing to make a drug to help people. It's another thing to provide a gas for whatever reason. Don't want it. The manufacturers of this gas in its compressed form used for execution might present a problem even for those states prepared now to bring on what is perceived as being this horrible new way of killing people.
Interesting twists and turns.
Yeah, indeed. A real parallel.
Vale Kenneth Eugene Smith, who died 25th of January 2024.
Yeah, goodbye, Kenny. But these are what I perhaps should have told him. ¶¶